Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. On Friday, March 15th, Vice President Kamala Harris met with the rapper Fat Joe, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, Chris Goldstein from Pennsylvania Normal, and a few others at the White House to discuss marijuana policy. Here's Vice President Harris.
I've said many times, I think we all at this table believe, nobody should have to go to jail for smoking weed. And what we need to do is recognize that far too many people have been sent to jail for simple marijuana possession. And the impact is such that, in particular, Black Americans and Latinos are four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession. And the disparity is even larger when you talk about the subset of Black men and Latino men. So this is an issue that must be addressed. It is work that, again, I have done over the years. It is work that we are also doing as an administration. First, I will tell you that we have pardoned tens of thousands of people with federal convictions for simple marijuana possession. And today we are joined by some of the pardon recipients so that we can have a conversation about what this has meant for them as a model and inspiration for what we must do for many others who are not at this table. And their stories, I will tell you, are proof of the importance of pardons and what it means in the life of an individual in terms of allowing them a second chance and an ability to reenter their community in a productive way. Second, we have issued a call to action for states to pardon these types of offenses, in particular on possession. That is why I've asked the governor of Kentucky to be here, Governor Beshear, who has basically pardoned and has addressed the convictions of people in Kentucky with simple marijuana possession convictions, and they can now apply for pardons. So he's going to talk with us about that as a model for what other states can and should do, and I challenge other states to follow his lead. Third, we have directed the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Justice to reassess how marijuana is classified under the federal drug schedule. And I cannot emphasize enough that they need to get to it as quickly as possible, and we need to have a resolution based on their findings and their assessment. But this issue is stark when one considers the fact that on the schedule currently, marijuana is considered as dangerous as heroin. Marijuana is considered as dangerous as heroin and more dangerous than fentanyl, which is absurd, not to mention patently unfair. So I'm sure DA is working as quickly as possible and will continue to do so, and we look forward to the product of their work. And with that, I will conclude by saying that the work that we have achieved thus far is important, but there still is much more to do. And I thank the participants who are at this table. And Governor, again, I want to thank you for your leadership, and Fat Joe for moderating our discussion today.
That was Vice President Kamala Harris speaking March 15th at the White House. And more than 40 years ago, when I first went to D.C. to attend Normal's national conference, a lot of people thought legalization was a pipe dream. Measure 5 back in 86? We got trounced. But we never gave up hope. Because one thing has been clear for more than a century. Prohibition doesn't work. It doesn't matter if it's alcohol or amphetamine, hemp or heroin. Prohibition doesn't work. It only creates violence, creates corruption. Prohibition creates crime. The enforcement of prohibition violates human and civil rights. Now, you may disagree, or you may agree, yet believe nothing really ever changes, so why bother? And, you know, I understand. I've heard it all before, even from friends. literally for decades, starting back in 1983. And now it's 2024. There are legal marijuana dispensaries within easy walking distance of my home and all throughout the state, as well as in several other states all around the country. Changes take time and hard work, but the times do change. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs holds its 67th session in Vienna, Austria this year from March 14th through March 22nd. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Türk addressed the CND on March 14th.
I very much welcome the opportunity to address this commission, especially as such a critical moment for global action on the world drug situation. After decades of following a largely punitive approach, we can see that this is simply not working, not by any metric. The number of people using drugs has risen sharply. Criminalization, including the use of the death penalty, has neither diminished drug use nor deterred drug-related crime. Instead, more and more lives are ruined, not just by the use of drugs itself, but also by the fallout of counterproductive policies. Mass incarceration, communities stigmatized, impoverished and plagued by violence, arbitrary detention, the escalation of lethal force that can descend into extrajudicial killings taking place with impunity. And the list goes on. Representing a roll call of misery and violations of human rights, it does not have to be this way. We have the evidence of what works and the means to implement it. With the 2024 midterm review very much in mind, my office issued a report last August on human rights challenges related to the global drug problem, clearly setting out the serious human rights consequences of the so-called war on drugs, and highlighting positive developments in the form of drug policy approaches that are health and rights centered. Approaches that do not resort to condemning people who use drugs as criminals, but instead view their situation through the lens of human dignity and rights. A number of countries have ventured down this path, applying an evidence-based harm reduction approach and decriminalizing the use of some drugs. In Portugal and Switzerland, for example, decades of decriminalization of personal consumption and possession have lowered drug use, overdoses, and HIV infections. In Colombia, a new national drug policy is anchored in human rights and development, focusing on improving the living conditions of the communities that depend on the drug economy, targeting prosecutions at those who benefit most from criminal activity while dismantling criminal networks. Pakistan ended capital punishment for drug-related offenses last year. I urge all countries to embrace this positive shift to evolve their own approaches. Our report sets out recommendations on how to do this, building on the international guidelines on human rights and drug policy. We need inclusive and gender-sensitive drug policies that ensure access on a voluntary basis to medical care, drug dependence treatment, and harm reduction services, and which are designed, implemented, and evaluated through processes that facilitate the meaningful engagement of people who use drugs, affected communities, youth, and civil society organizations. We need urgent action to end discrimination in law enforcement against people of African descent, indigenous peoples, and marginalized populations. And as we revitalize efforts towards the 2030 agenda, we must stop leaving people behind who use drugs, their families, and the affected communities. This means, as the Commission has recognized, investing in alternative development. We must also address poverty, lack of opportunities, insecure environments, the whole range of underlying structural socioeconomic factors that increase the risk of people using drugs or becoming involved in the drug trade. As for decriminalization of personal use, if well designed and implemented, this can also be a powerful instrument to ensure better protection of the rights of people who use drugs. Excellencies, colleagues, the midterm review is a moment of great opportunity for setting in motion the transformative change that is needed globally on drug policies. I welcome the renewed commitment to human rights in the high-level declaration adopted today, along with commitments to evidence-based policies, the mainstreaming of age and gender perspectives, and to the health of families, individuals, and communities. In relation to the gaps that the declaration identifies in meeting international commitments, I urge all states, civil society, and other stakeholders to implement the recommendations that are contained in my office's report, and to work with us and the broader UN human rights system to move forward together in embedding an approach to the world drug situation that is humane as it is effective. Thank you very much.
That was Volker Türk, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, addressing the 67th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on March 14th. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear now from Winnie Byanyima, Executive Director of UNAIDS.
Gathered here are leaders whose decisions can save and transform lives, tackle social exclusion, and protect public health for everyone. As leaders, you can deliver on the shared pledge to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. If all people can secure the HIV prevention, testing, treatment, and care services that they need. To end AIDS, we must ensure that no one is excluded. But today, too often, laws and policies for people who use drugs just exacerbate exclusion. People who use drugs are criminalized in 145 countries and can face the death penalty in 35 countries. The stigma and outright fear that this generates is driving people away from vital health services, driving away the people who most need the services. Only 1% of people who inject drugs have access to the recommended harm reduction services. And what are the consequences? People who use drugs are 7 times more likely to be infected with HIV than other adults. And women who use drugs are almost twice as likely to be infected by HIV than men who use drugs. The status quo, punishing people who use drugs, is causing catastrophic harm. It is further marginalizing the most marginalized members of our society and obstructing the world from achieving our shared goal to end AIDS and protect the health of everyone. But this is not fate. We can change it. Indeed, we know from the evidence how to change it. UNAIDS supports governments and communities to advance approaches to HIV that have been proven to work. In 2012, Estonia was number one for new HIV cases attributable to injecting drug use in Europe. In 2021, there were just five new infections related to drug use. How did they do it? They did it by decriminalizing possession of drugs for personal use, focusing on public health, investing in harm reduction, and putting communities at the center. Ghana recently removed criminal penalties for possession of drugs for personal use and is already seeing the benefits for public health. The evidence is clear. Stigmatization kills and perpetuates the AIDS pandemic. Harm reduction and respect for everyone's human rights saves lives and helps countries advance along the path that will end AIDS. What would an evidence-based, effective, harm-reducing policy framework for drug policy include? It would include decriminalizing possession of drugs for personal use, investing in HIV prevention responses, including harm reduction, led by people who use drugs, including people who use drugs in policymaking that affects them, like our friends at INPUD who are represented here today. This is not radical. These approaches are all in line with the political declaration on HIV/AIDS, with the global AIDS strategy, with the sustainable development goals, and with recommendations made by the High Commissioner for Human Rights. It's out there in the mainstream. The excellent work by communities and countries leading the way has proven them. The question is the world, are we, all of us here, bold enough to choose evidence over prejudice, inclusion over exclusion, laws that help over laws that harm? Shaping policies to ensure that no one is obstructed from access to vital health services is not a favor to one group. Protecting the rights of everyone is how we will protect the health of everyone. The stakes are too high for us not to be courageous.
That was Winnie Bianima, Executive Director of UNAIDS, addressing the 67th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on March 14th. Now here's His Excellency Dr. Manuel Pizarro, Minister of Health of Portugal.
Portugal fully associates itself with the statement of the European Union. War has become a norm in various geographies. It brings material and cultural destruction, sets economies back turn, challenges educational efforts, threats the environment, and leaves entire generations unable to rebuild their lives. We must turn this tide by upholding the principles of the United Nations Charter, international law, and international humanitarian law, and fostering dialogue between violence-waging powers. Portugal would like to seize this occasion to reaffirm our unrelenting opposition to the death penalty in all circumstances, including for drug-related offenses. The midterm review has provided us a crucial opportunity to take stock on the progress made since the adoption of the 2019 ministerial declaration, and it has also reminded us that many challenges remain and new ones arise. We, member states, United Nations bodies, international organizations, and civil society must strengthen and accelerate the efforts to implement all drug policy commitments. In particular, the UNGAS 2016 outcome document, which must be addressed with innovative measures and strong engagement in order to define the parameters of the United Nations drug policy behind 2029. We welcome the adoption of the outcome document of this midterm review and its emphasis on the need for new approaches to overcome persistent barriers in the next 5 years. Portugal welcomes the resolution of the United Nations Human Rights Council adopted in April 2023 on drug policies and human rights, and the report of the Office of the High Commissioner on the human rights challenges in addressing and countering all aspects of the world drug problem, and commends the synergies being built on this topic between Geneva and Vienna-based organizations of the UN system. The report provides us with important guidance and rationale on how we can move towards more health and human rights-based drug policies. Mr. Chair, promoting and protecting health, including by ensuring access and availability of evidence-based prevention, early detection and intervention, risk and harm reduction, treatment and social reintegration measures on a non-discriminatory basis and targeting specific groups is vital to protect the most vulnerable, reduce stigma, and ensure the participation of all actors. And here, let me stress the importance of meaningful, comprehensive, structured, and balanced civil society engagement in the formulation and implementation of drug policies on all levels. In Portugal, the evidence-based knowledge acquired over the last 20 years gave us the leverage to develop an integrated and comprehensive drug policy aimed at preventing drug use and promote public health within a decriminalization framework of personal consumption and possession of drugs, while reaffirming the commitment to supply reduction of efforts. The data and evidence have proven the effectiveness of the Portuguese model and its impact on people who use drugs and on our society. Since 1999, problematic consumers had reduced for more than two-thirds, and the prevalence of HIV among drug users has decreased 98%. Mr. Chair, we stand ready to continue to promote the development of more health-oriented and human rights-based drug policies, and we believe that their positive effect on the efforts to achieve the objectives of the three international drug control conventions and other relevant international instruments, in particular on human rights. With a view to enhancing the implementation of all drug policy commitments, I pledged for Portugal to increase access to treatment services, namely by increasing inpatient capacity and reducing waiting times until 2028.
That was His Excellency Dr. Manuel Pizarro, Minister of Health of Portugal, addressing the 67th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on March 14th. Here's Dr. Diego André Lugo Vivas with the International Coalition on Drug Policy Reform.
The Institute of Development and Peace Studies in the past and Human Rights Watch have shown how the situation in Colombia is extremely delicate in terms of the security of social and environmental leaders. More than 1,200 human rights defenders have been killed in Colombia since 2016. According to In the Past, in 2023, 188 leaders and land defenders were killed, making Colombia the most lethal country in the world in this regard. The situation in the department of Cauca, where I come from, and which has the second largest indigenous population in the country, and one of the largest peasant populations at the national level, is just as delicate, if it is not worse. Cauca accounts for more than 20% of those violent deaths, making this department the most lethal region for the protection of human rights defenders in the world. And it is getting worse. In more detail, half of these deaths were against indigenous leaders, most of them concentrated among one particular First Nation, the Paez Nasa people. And the situation of the peasantry is the same. So the question is why? Why does this violence rage against indigenous and peasant groups? Why this violence against us? And the answer seems to be simple. The violence that attacks us is ongoing legacy of colonization and evidently the war on drugs. It is the result of colonial views of whiteness, sexism, classism, misogynistic behaviors, racism, patriarchal abuse, homophobia, and transphobia. What is happening in Colombia is armed conflict, fueled by abandonment, extreme inequality, and a perpetual and senseless drug war. Because suffice to say, the most violent territories for indigenous and peasant leaders are those where there is an intertwining of narcotic drugs, strange and absurd responses of the state to this problem, and a socioeconomic fabric that has privileged land grabbing and environmentally degrading farming practices, ignoring the precariousness of the rural population, all for safeguarding and defending this perpetual and totally ineffective war on drugs. Speaking on behalf of both the International Indigenous Drug Policy Alliance and PASAN communities from Colombia, makes me aware of how these problems of erasure and extermination are universal. Speaking on this stage makes me think that these communities share a disconnection, a history of disconnection from our lands, language, families, and culture, and that it is upon this devastation that the new illicit substances and the global drug control system have landed. A comprehensive approach to drug policy reform must include a macro strategy to contain a continuum of armed, everyday, and environmental violence. New orientations should put people and the environment at the center, that are peasant and indigenous indigenous-led and reduce inequality. Coca regulation, among other substances, must pursue the decriminalization of the most vulnerable groups, producer families on the one hand and users on the other. And this must be accompanied by agrarian educational, respectful of diversity, and above all, collective and horizontal substance regulation exercise that doesn't trigger corporate green grabbing. Decriminalization, regulation, and transition to formality must be done, but it must be done well. Otherwise, such moves would only imply the transfer of power from one legal abuser to another one. For more than 60 years, countries have been trying to contain the production, use, distribution, and commercialization of narcotic drugs. Today, producing countries create more drugs than ever before. The so-called consumer countries have seen their use skyrocket and with no solution in sight. And distribution has created the most perverse economies of incentives and criminal deployment with no solution in sight. It is clear that 60 years after the war on drugs, its objectives are increasingly unattainable. And to continue with such a misguided vision will only put vulnerable communities around the world in the middle of a war that is not theirs. So until that approach changes, stories like the one I just told, and thousands of other leaders, the deaths of other leaders will be our daily bread. Until you decide to do something, because it is in your interest and your capacity to do something. The question I have is why it hasn't been or wanted to be understood, and why we are still in the same situation. Thank you.
That was Dr. Diego Andre Lugo Vivas with the International Coalition on Drug Policy Reform addressing the 67th session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs on March 14th. The 67th session of the CND ends on March 22nd. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. You'll also find a link there to subscribe to the Prison Pipeline podcast. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give its page a like, share it with friends. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! Just a soul's intention.